Morning. Today's daf in Pesachim is daf Chafei. Schedule for this week is there's no daf tomorrow. It's Tisha B'Av. There's an issur of Torah. So what we'll try to do is we'll try to get a little bit ahead today. We'll try to get into Chavav a little bit today, and then when we resume on Wednesday morning, so we'll make up some ground. We're on Chavdal Amid Beis, so we already need a little bit to make up this morning, and we're discussing the Isuri Hana. It's now been established after the Gemara spent about 3-4 dapim of the second parak. It's now been established chametz is asur b'hana. How do we arrive at that conclusion? So that there are a number of routes to get to that same destination, but the destination is the same though. Chametz is asur b'hana. One opinion in the Gemara amongst the Tanaim is that chametz is not asur b'hana, but that's not the conclusion. The conclusion is that chametz is in fact asur b'hana. We know that either because the Torah says lo sochlu, which includes both achila and hana, or perhaps we know it from the word lo se'achel, which means I'm not only allowed to, am I not allowed to eat chametz, but it's not allowed to be a causation of eating, or perhaps we learned it out from an imeno inyan, one of the methodologies of the Torah, where I take a pasuk from somewhere else which is extraneous and I apply it to chametz. Whatever the path we take, we're arriving at the same point, and that is that chametz is aser behana. And now, as long as we're here, the Gemara just uses this opportunity to talk in general about Isuri Hana, some very big concepts coming up over the course of today, tomorrow, regarding Isuri Hana. We begin today, we're on Chavdal Amud Beis, and we're starting in the Gemara a little bit towards the top. Amar Rabbi Abba. The Gemara begins, Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan, Kol Isuri Shabbatorah Ein Lokin Aleihen Ela Derech Achila San. So the issur in the Torah is only going to be violated. You're only going to get malchus, I should say. Right? Could be that it's still going to be prohibited, but you will get malchus only when it's derech achilasan, only when you eat it in the usual manner. So in other words, there's this basic idea that comes up, and we're going to see it now over the course of the next daf, I would say, and that is that there's what's called regular usage. And regular usage is going to be defining what exactly is, I mean, in terms of the definition of regular usage. So we'll see over the course of today, that's, you know, in other words, that's considered normative usage. In other words, whatever people around you are normally doing. But whatever is considered normative usage is going to be the only way you're violating the Issur in the Torah. If you do it in an unusual manner, it's not going to be an Issur Torah. Again, it may be an Issur Derabanan, but it's not going to be an Issur Torah. So for example, let's say I eat chalev. Chalev is the forbidden fats of an animal. And I eat it raw. No, they're uncooked. Now, that's not usual. That's not normal. Normally, before you eat chalev, you cook it. So a person's going to be pater from doing so. The terminology of pater, we see it time and again. Pater means that it's not a Torah liability. It could be rabbinically prohibited, but it's not a Torah liability. Ikad Amri, the Gemara brings another version of this discussion. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Yisroel Shabbat Torah, Ein Lokin Aleihem Ela Derech Hana'asan. So here, what's the difference, what's the subtle difference between the first way Rav Yochanan said and the second way? And the first way Rav Yochanan said is Derech Achilasan. Here is Derech Hana'asan, the normal method of benefiting. Lemute Mai. So I'm Rav Shimei Barash, Lemute Shimei Chelev Shel Shor Niskal. Agabe Makaso. So now we're talking about the Chelev of Shor Niskal. Why do we change topics? Because according to the second version, we're not talking about Achila. We're talking about Hana, the Isser of Hana. So just like by the Isser of Achila, we said Derech Achilasan. So now according to the second version, Derech Hana means Derech Hana'asan, the normal way of getting benefit. So if I took the Chelev of Shor Niskal, Shor Niskal, as we already established over the last couple of Dapim of Gemara, is Asur Behana. One is not to eat nor benefit from the Shor Niskal. So if I take the fat of the Shor Niskal and I rub it on a wound, Shupata, that person is going to be exempt. It's an unusual manner of benefiting from the fat of the Shor HaNiskal. Usually, what do you do with fat? If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi gives you what your normal usages of fat are. So Rashi says, Chalev, Rashi is a little bit lower where we are in the Gemara. Ein derech hanaso ela behavara. So what do I normally do with fat, says Rashi? I burn the fat, use it as a fuel, use it as illumination. Limshoch oros. Or what we do with fat is that we spread it over the leather. Part of the tanning process, don't ask me, I don't know. And certainly it's not used for refuah. In other words, I don't normally use the fat as a way of healing, so this is considered unusual. And Rashi then goes on to say that according to the second Mandamer, you're for sure going to agree with the first Mandamer, meaning the second version already includes in it the idea of the first version that it has to be Derech Achilasan as well. Okay. Back into the Gemara, continuing the Gemara, Idmar Nami. I'm sorry, the Gemara says it. I apologize. I gave Rashi credit when really it's the Gemara itself that says it. Idmar Nami, the Gemara quotes another statement as well. Amar Rav Acha bar Avya, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan. Hinichel Shashor Nizkal, Agam Makasa Pater. Lefi Shekoli Yisrael Shepater in Lokan Aleim El Aderech Hanasan. Okay, same basic point. That in order to be chayv min haTorah, in order to be liable in the Torah, so you have to benefit in a normal manner, in the usual manner. I'm Rabbi Zeraf Nami Tanina. I'll show you a mission that speaks to this idea as well. In Sofkin Asarabai Misham Arla, Ela Al Hayotze Min Azesim Umin Anavim Balvad. Now again, we know we spoke about the prohibition of Arla. Arla, you're not allowed to eat Arla, the fruit that comes off the tree the first 3 years after it is planted. Nor are you allowed to benefit from Arla as well. Arla is also ba'achila uvehana. And meanwhile, the Mishnah says, when are you going to receive malchus for Arla? That's only if I squeeze the juice out of an olive or out of a grape. But only those two fruit. If I squeeze the juice out of any other fruit that comes off a tree, even though that fruit came off the tree in the first 3 years, one is not in violation of the Isser of Arla. V'ilu, and the Gemara makes a very simple diak in the Mishnah. V'ilu mitusim v'tayinim v'rimonim lo. Now, if I take a strawberry and I squeeze out its juice, strawberry juice, and the same thing with figs and the same thing with pomegranates, lo. One is not going to be liable. And it only begs the question, well, why not? Meaning, what's the difference between pomegranate juice, which nowadays is very popular, what's the difference between pomegranate juice and grape juice? Or, I don't mean grape juice, but I mean juice of the grape. Right, probably going to be used for wine. Or olive juice. And again, I don't mean olive juice, I mean olive oil. What's the difference? So my time, Allah Misham Dalokahu Derech HaNasan. So the Gemara says, presumably because that's unusual. When I eat a pomegranate, I normally eat the fruit. I don't normally eat the juice, and therefore it is Lav Derech Achila, or in this case, Lav Derech HaNa'a. And therefore, one is not going to be liable. So isn't that the pshat in the Mishnah? So Amalei Abaye, so Abaye says, I don't think so. I don't think that's the pshat. Bishlami iyash min prigufa delo kachla derech hanasa shapir. Abaye says, look, if the Mishnah in, if this Mishnah, by the way, where is it? It's in Trumos, yeah. So if this Mishnah would have talked about the actual fruit itself, and it spoke about fruit being eaten in an unusual way, or just simply unusual fruit. In other words, had it been talking about the fruit itself, so then I would have told you, yeah, that's a great diak in the Mishnah. Elahacha mishum dezeya ba'amahu. But over here, we're not talking about the juice, we're not talking about the fruit, we're talking about the juice that's extracted from the fruit. And so what the Mishnah here, the point the Mishnah here is making is a different point altogether. And that is, juice extracted from a fruit, generally speaking, is not fruit. Meaning, I take an orange, I juice it, meaning I extract the juice out of the fruit. So we call it orange juice, but that's not the fruit. The Gemara's terminology is zeya ba'alma. It's the perspiration of the fruit. It's not the fruit. That's generally true. And so therefore, I mean, we see this in the world of brachos. Meaning I take a juice, I take an orange, I squeeze it, out comes the juice, and what bracha do I make? I don't make a bar priyates. We make a shakal. Meaning, again, the bracha just speaks to the idea. But the idea is that generally speaking, the juice that comes out is zeya ba'alma. It's not considered the fruit. In the world of Arla, same basic story. Meaning, so when I take any fruit other than olives and grapes, which we'll get back to in just a moment, but if I take any fruit, the Torah only prohibits me from benefiting from the fruit. But the juice that is extracted from the fruit, that's not the fruit. That's just zeya ba'alma, that the Torah doesn't prohibit. I understood, it's interesting. It's a derivative of the fruit, obviously, but it's not the fruit itself. Therefore, it's mutter. Now, when we go back to grapes and olives, what are we going to have to say by grapes and olives? What we're going to have to say is that the juice that's extracted from grapes and olives is not zeya ba'alma, but rather that's considered the fruit. Now, why that should be? Okay, so this can get into a much lengthier discussion. It could be that just simply because that's the normal practice of what happens with olives and grapes, meaning normally what we do with olives and grapes is that we convert it into a juice. And therefore the juice that comes out is not zeya ba'alma, but actual fruit. meaning grape juice is grape, and olive juice is olive. Yeah, they're correct. In other words, right, the sixth parak of brachos, we talked to the idea that when I'm drinking olive oil, which is strange, but if I'm doing so, so you make a bar pre eitz, because, yes.
So in an orange tree that was used for a avodah zarah, could use a juice?
Well, again, that may be different, because the isser in arla is an isser that I'm not allowed to enjoy the fruit. The Torah is specific about the fruit of the tree. So if I'm not, in other words, so the juice that comes out is not fruit. But in other words, when it comes to other Yisurim, I don't know if it would have application to other Yisurim, meaning by Avodah Zarah, the whole thing becomes Asur Ba'ana. So maybe even its perspiration would as well. I'm not sure about that. But, in other words, but that's the basic idea. Okay, so it's not a good proof. We wanted to bring this mission as a proof that, oh, you see, it's unusual. No, that's not, it has nothing to do with unusual. This has to do with the fact that fruit, the juice that's extracted from a fruit, aside from olives and aside from grapes, are not fruit. It's Zeya Ba'alma. So, not a great raya from this Mishnah in Shumas. Amar Abayin. Hakol Modim B'Klai Akarim Shalokin Aleim Afil Shal Kederach HaNasan. When it comes to Klai Akarim is when I take grapes and I take a vine, I plant a vineyard, and in that same vineyard I plant other produce as well. So I'm violating the Issur of Klai Akarim. There's Klai Akarim, it could also apply even if it's not grapes, but the Torah's prohibition really focuses around the vineyard, around grape and a grapevine. And if I do so, in other words, if I plant grapes together with other produce, so now the yield, it's what results from that is aser. It's aser ba'achila, it's aser ba'ana. So the Gemara now is going to suggest, Abai is going to suggest that everyone agrees that when it comes to Klai Karen, you're going to receive malchus for Klai Karen, even if I benefit from it in an unusual manner. My time up, mishum doloksi buhu achila. Because when it comes to Klai Karen, the Torah never says don't eat it. That's not the language that the Torah uses. Look at Rashi. Rashi says Klai Karen ksiv pen tikdash hamaleya. The Torah says that what happens is that you're supposed to be tikdash. And Rashi explains the word tikdash means that you have to burn it, you have to incinerate it. Demashma lotana mimenu ala tisrafenu. Don't, you can't benefit from it, but rather that your only option once you have klai karim is to destroy it, to incinerate it. Upen lavu, and then Rashi just simply points out that the word pen in the pasuk means lav, don't. Meaning don't, and tikdash amalei, you must incinerate it. Okay, anyway, but the point is that when it comes to klai karim, there is no pasuk in the Torah that says don't eat it. It just simply says you must destroy it. And because the Torah didn't couch the Isser in the term of Achila, so therefore there's no parameter in terms of how to enjoy it and how not to enjoy it. Any benefit of the Klai Karim is therefore going to be Asr, even if it's an unusual manner. Because it doesn't say the word Achila. Okay, this is a thesis posited by Abaye. And now the Gemara is going to challenge. Now the challenge over here is going to get a little bit complicated because basically we're going to get into a lot of limudim, but the basic point, just so we don't lose our train of thought, the basic point that the Gemara wants to make is that it doesn't seem like Abaye is right based on the following brisa which we're about to cover. Now, Meisvei. Isi ben Yehuda omer minan labasar b'chalav shu asar. How do I know that basar b'chalav is asar? Funny question. How do I know? Doesn't the Torah say so? Yes and no. The Torah says, "Lo sevashal gediba chalev imo." You're not allowed to cook meat and milk together, and more literally, you're not allowed to cook a kid in its mother's milk. So, okay, but anyway, the Torah says cook, meaning the Isser in the Torah is bishul. How do I know that it also includes achila as well? Meaning, kipshuto, the simple pshat of the Torah is that the prohibition is only you're not allowed to cook. How do I know that I'm not allowed to eat meat and milk together? All right, so probably you are more familiar with the Gemara in Chulin that says that the Torah says it three times, Lo sevashal gedi b'chalev imo, and since it says Bishul three times, once for the Isser of Bishul, once for the Isser of Achila, and once for the Isser of Anah. That's the more popular way to arrive at the conclusion that we're not allowed to eat meat and milk together. What we're about to do is a less popular method of how to arrive at that conclusion. How do I know that meat and milk is aser? Nemar kan ki am kadosh ata. It says in Parshas Re'eh, you are a holy nation. V'nemar la'alam v'anche kodesh tiyun li. And it says back in Parshas Mishpatim, so ma'alahalan asr afkan asr. Now, the pasuk that is referred to in Parshas Re'eh, if I'm not mistaken, is talking about Trefa. Huh? So it's talking about Neve. Okay, fine.
It's in between the
Nevela. So, right. So it says Nevela, Ve'anche Kadosh Tiyun Li, so Ma'alahalan Asr Afkan Asr. So just like there's an Isra Achila on Nevela, so too there's an Isra Achila on Basar B'Chalav. Ve'ain Li Ela Ba'Achila. Now that only arrives me at the conclusion that I can't eat Basar B'Chalav. Ve'anami 9. How do I know that I can't get benefit from Basar B'Chalav? So again, not the traditional, I don't know but traditional. In other words, the other drasha that Gemara and Chulin gives, which is more popular, is the three-time usage of Lo Sivashel. But over here, however, we're going to now not go with that approach, but we're going to go with an approach of Kav HaChomer. How do I know that Basar B'Chalav is Asar Behana? Amar Kav HaChomer, so the Gemara says, we can arrive at this conclusion based on a Kav HaChomer. Uma Arla, Shalo Nevda Bo Aveira, Asura Behana. Let's start with Arla. Did I do anything wrong with Arla? No, I did nothing wrong. I planted a tree. That's a good thing, right? Especially in Eretz Yisrael. So, and the Torah expects me to plant a tree. It just happens to be that the result of planting a tree is that the fruit for those first 3 years are Usser. So I am creating Isser, but I did nothing wrong in creating the Isser. It's fine to plant trees. And meanwhile, the fruit that is the result of that planting is Usser Ba'ana. So Arla, I create Arla, but by not violating any Isser in the Torah. So now let's hear the logic. If Arla, which was created without any Avera, is going to be Asa Ba'achila Uvahana, Basar B'Chalav that was created with an Avera. In other words, how do you ever get to Basar B'Chalav? By violating the Isser in the Torah of Lo Sivashel Gedib B'Chalav Imo. So now I have Basar B'Chalav. The way I got here is by violating an Isser in the Torah. So if I violate an Isser in the Torah to get here, so for sure it should be Asar B'Achila. Uvahana. That's our first argument. The Gemara says, "Marla arla shekin lo aisa lo shasa kosher." Tomer bebasar b'chalav shaisa lo shasa kosher. So the Gemara says, "Okay, but can I really compare arla to basar b'chalav?" Let's think about this. Arla never had a shasa kosher. Arla was prohibited from inception, from the moment that I planted the tree. Now all the fruit that's going to result from that is going to be asr. So it didn't have a shasa kosher. Basar b'chalav did in fact have a shasa kosher. It did have a moment where it was permitted. Before I mixed the two together, the meat was permitted and the milk was permitted. Okay. So
based on this logic, could you argue that if somebody else made it, you
need to milk it? Okay, wait, just one second. We'll just go one moment. Chametz, let's first get through the thread because we're going to go a lot back and forth. So as it is, the Gemara stands to be a little bit confusing, so let's first get there, and then we'll get confused with other points. So, v'haisa lo shasa kosher, tomer bebasa b'chalav shaisa lo shasa kosher, chametz bepesach yochiach, shaisa lo shasa kosher v'asa b'ana. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. Not the best comparison between arla and basa b'chalav, but how about this? Let's introduce chametz into the discussion. Chametz had a shasa kosher. Chametz, before the yontif of Pesach, was mutter. And meanwhile, what happens when Pesach rolls along? When Pesach comes along, it's asr b'achila uvehana. It had a shasa kosher, and yet it's asr b'achila hana. The asr b'hana, malach chametz b'pesach shekein. I'm sorry. So maybe what we're going to do now is we're going to make a comparison between basar b'chalav and chametz to arrive at the conclusion that basar b'chalav should be asr b'hana. So the Gemara says, I don't know if that comparison is also fair. Malach chametz b'pesach shekein anosh kares. So the Gemara says, okay, but chametz is an isur kares. Basar b'chalav is just a lav. So yes, you're right, chametz is asur b'ana. But can I then really translate that back to basar b'chalav, which is mutar which is not in isur kares? So tomer b'basar b'chalav sheino anosh kares. Klai akeren yochiach. Shein enosh kares v'asar b'ana. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to go back to Klai HaKerem. Klai HaKerem there's no kares prohibition for eating Klai HaKerem or for benefiting from Klai HaKerem. And meanwhile, it's asar b'ana. And we're going to stop right here in the middle of the Braisa. Probably what's going to happen at this point in the Braisa, meaning we don't have any more of the Braisa, but then the Braisa is going to say something to the tune of Lo Rizeki Rizev, Lo Rizeki Rizev, meaning, okay, it's not a perfect comparison between Klai Kerem to Basar B'Chalav. It's not a perfect comparison between Chametz and Basar B'Chalav. So maybe what I'll do is I'll look at the common denominator between the two, and then based on the Tzad HaShav, the common denominator, so therefore the conclusion is that Basar B'Chalav is going to be Asar V'Hana. Okay, so that was the Braisa's attempt to prove to us that Basar B'Chalav is Asar V'Hana. That's the starting point of the discussion. Now again, remember, why did we bring this up? Because Abaye made the statement that when it comes to Klai Karen, you're going to get malchus for benefiting from mixed produce, from crossed produce, even if I don't eat it in the usual manner. And the reason why Abaye says this is because the Torah doesn't say lo sochal. The Torah doesn't tell me don't eat Klai Karen. All the Torah tells me is that if I make it, I got to burn it. I got to destroy it. But in other words, because the Torah doesn't tell me lo sochlu, so therefore I'm going to violate the isser of benefiting, even if I do it in an unusual way. That was Abaye's point. So the Gemara says, now let's go back to this Braisa. This Braisa wanted to prove that Basar B'Chalav is Asar V'Hana by comparing it to Klai Kerem. So the Gemara says, im isa nifrach ma'ala Klai Kerem shekin lo kan alam afilu shelo kederach hanasan. So if you're right, I already know that the comparison between Klai Kerem and Basar B'Chalav is fundamentally flawed. Because Basar B'Chalav, presumably, although we're going to challenge this in just a moment, you're only going to violate it if I eat it in a usual and a normal fashion. Klai HaKerem, according to Abaye, I'm going to be violating Klai HaKerem even if I eat it in an unusual fashion. So already I see that there is a built-in chumrah to Klai HaKerem that there isn't to Basar B'Chalav. And if that's so why, asks the Gemara, or how can Abaye be correct? Doesn't sound like he's right, because the Braisa doesn't make any acknowledgement of his point, and the Braisa had a perfect opportunity to do so. The Abaye. So now let's think in terms of Abaye. How are we going to defend Abaye? Tomer b'mai. Tomer b'basar b'chalav shein lokin alav ela derech hanaso. Atu basar b'chalav achila ksiv bei. So Abaye, in his defense, says, you know, my point that I made regarding Klai Kerem, it happens to be the exact same point that we can make regarding Basar B'Chalav. Meaning the reason why Klai HaKerem is not, one violates even if he enjoys it in an unusual manner, is because the Torah doesn't use the word Achila when telling us not to eat Klai HaKerem. Did you notice that the Torah does the same thing by Basar B'Chalav as well? The Torah doesn't say don't eat Basar B'Chalav. The Torah says lo sevashal gedi b'chalev imo. And so therefore, maybe Abaye's point by Klai Kerem could in fact be the very same point by Basar B'Chalav as well. And so therefore, they're on the same playing field, and that's why the comparison between the two is not just a good comparison, it's a great comparison. V'idach, dekamosev la sav la hachika gamar minevela. Ma nevelach derech hanasa, Basar B'Chalav derech hanasa. Now, the one who challenged Abaye from the Braisa, he could still hold his ground. I still think you're wrong. Why? Because if you look at the beginning of the Braisa, how do we know that Basar B'Chalav is even Asar B'Achila? Where did that come from? It came from the pasuk comparing the Isser of Basar B'Chalav to the Isser of Nevela. Well, we know Nevela is, the Torah says, Lo Sochlu Kol Nevela, don't eat Nevela. So we know Nevela circumscribes it with the word Achila, and therefore one will only violate the prohibition of the Torah if he eats it in a usual fashion. So the one who challenged the Abaye thought, same thing by Basar B'Chalav. It must be that you have to enjoy it in the usual fashion because it's compared to Nevela. The Abaye, and again, now the Gemara is going to go back to Abaye. Why does Abaye not agree with that thinking? No, I just simply disagree, says Abaye. Look, you're right, the Torah compares it to Nevela. But that's exactly why the Torah doesn't say the word Achila when it comes to Basar B'Chalav, because the Torah wants to communicate to us that the prohibition of Basar B'Chalav is even if I enjoy it in an unusual manner. Yes, the Torah compares it to Nevela, But the Torah also goes out of its way not to mention the word achila when it comes to basar b'chalav. So therefore, Abayi says, I'm going to hold my ground. So very interesting. Basically, what you have over here is a machlokus between Abayi and whoever you want to say, the grand editor, whoever Abayi is discussing this with. Gemara doesn't really give us attribution. In terms of Klai Kerem and, by extension, basar b'chalav, because we know they're both asar. And we know they're both asar b'ana. And the Torah doesn't use the word achila when communicating that to us. So according to Abayi, what the Torah is trying to tell us is that not only are you not allowed to eat it, even eating it or enjoying it in an unusual manner is going to be prohibited. That's Abaye's thought process. And whoever's arguing with Abayi says no. They may or may not be true by Klai HaKerem. I don't know what his position on Klai HaKerem is, but certainly not true by Basar B'Chalav. Why not? Because the Torah compares Basar B'Chalav to Nevela. And just like Nevela is Derech Achila, so too Basar B'Chalav is Derech Achila. Yeah, I understand that, but it doesn't say it, though. In other words, the Torah just simply says Bishel. So the Torah doesn't say Achila, and, I mean, the Torah had an opportunity to do so. The Torah mentions the Issah three times. So it could have said the word Achila. I mean, it's conspicuous that the Torah doesn't mention the word Achila. V'lifroch. Now, as long as we quoted the Braisa, so the Gemara is just going to take a moment to go over one point in the Braisa, which I was going to comment when we read the Braisa, but I said the Gemara is going to get to it. The Braisa, what did the Braisa say? I can't compare Arla to Basar B'Chalav. Why not? Because Mala Arla, look at the top line of the Amud. Mala Arla Shekain Lo Haisa Lo Shasa Kosher. Tomer B'Basar B'Chalav Shehaisa Lo Shasa Kosher. Okay, Arla did not have a shasa kosher. Basar B'Chalav did have a shasa kosher. Why did Basar B'Chalav have a shasa kosher? Because it was at one point just meat and milk before combined together. So in other words, it was mutter, and then by combining them together, they're asr. Arla, however, the fruit is asr from the point that you planted the tree, meaning from its birth. Even before its birth, it's already asr. Good. What bothers the Gemara now is that if you look back at the... Sorry, I'm sorry, not back. The... No? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Look forward in the Braisa. Right? The Braisa says, Ma'ala Arla Shekein Lo Shasa Kosher, Tomer Basar B'Chalav, Shai Lo Shasa Kosher. Chametz B'Pesach Chichich, Shai Lo Shasa Kosher, V'Asar Bana, Ma'ala Chametz B'Pesach Shekein Anashkaris, Tomer Basar B'Chalav, Shein Anashkaris, Klai HaKerem Yochiach, Shein Anashkaris. So the Gemara says, now what about Klai HaKerem? Klai HaKerem, the Gemara says, should prove it because there's no punishment of Karis. Okay. So now, what was the comparison? The Gemara now wanted to compare Klai HaKerem to Basar B'Chalav. The Gemara says, I don't know how good a comparison that is. Meaning, when it comes to Klai HaKerem, so what is it? I had a vineyard, and what did I do? I planted other produce. So the Gemara now wants to know. Or, let's not even say it like that. We could also simply say, I took grape seed, I took other seeds of other produce, and I put them in the ground together. So the Gemara now wonders. Now, what do we say by Basar B'Chalav? Basar B'Chalav had a shasa kosher. It had a moment and was permitted. Can the same thing be said about Klai HaKerem? Did Klai HaKerem ever have a shasa kosher? So the Gemara now wonders out loud. V'lifroch. Ma'ala Klai HaKerem shekein lo haisa lo shasa kosher. Presumably not. Presumably. Meaning Klai HaKerem, how do I produce it? I take a seed, I put it in the ground. I take another seed of another type, I put that in the ground. One could make an argument that it didn't have a shasa kosher. So basically, how can the Gemara compare Klai HaKerem to Basar B'Chalav? Basar B'Chalav clearly had a shasa kosher. The milk, mutter. The meat, mutter. When I cook the two together, now I have Basar B'Chalav. Is that true by Klai HaKerem? Presumably not. And so how can the Braisa make the comparison between Klai HaKerem and Basar B'Chalav? So Amar Rav Ada Ba'ava Zos Ameres Klai Akerem Ikarim Ne'esarim. Ho V'haisalem Shasa Kosher Kodem Ashrasha. So now, basically, the Gemara says, we're going to have to relook at Klai Akerem. Meaning, what did we think in going into this discussion? We thought going into this discussion that when does it become prohibited? When you start to see growth. Meaning that the growth of the vineyard and the growth of whatever else is growing, already now, at that point in time, now it's Klai Akerem. Gemara says, we're really going to have to rethink it. Maybe what we're going to say is that Klai Akerem is Aser B'Ikaran. Meaning already at the root. While it's taking root in the ground, it's going to be prohibited. And if that's true, so now we could say there was a before and there was an after. What's the before? Kodem Ashrasha. What's the after? Acher Ashrasha. So in other words, there is, one can argue now, that Klai Akerem, in a similar vein, is like Basa B'Chalav. I know it's not exactly the same, but this is how the Gemara now is looking at Klai Akerem. And the Gemara is forced to look at it this way, because the Braisa compared Klai Akerem to Basa B'Chalav without batting an eyelash. So it must be like this. Basa B'Chalav, I have milk, that's mutter. I have meat, that's mutter. I put the two together. So in other words, there was a Shasa Kosher. Klai HaKerem, we're going to have to say the same thing. I put the seed in the ground, that's mutter. I put the other seed in the ground, that's also mutter. And before it takes root, that's what's called the Shasa Kosher. After it takes root, even though it's still in the ground, that's where it's also. So in other words, it's going to force us to look at Klai HaKerem. The Isser doesn't start when you see actual growth coming out of the ground. The Isser actually is going to begin while still in ground. Okay.
The thing is, Basar HaKhalav, you're actually using it together. The whole concept is the same Basar HaKhalav.
Right.
Basar HaKhalav. It's like, once they're together, you're forbidden.
Right. You're right. You could have made the argument, which the Gemara doesn't seem to do, you could have made the argument that once they mix together, it's like a total new entity.
Right.
Right. Agreed. The Gemara doesn't do that. I do hear you. Okay. Mesiv Rav Shmaya. So Rav Shmaya says, okay, are you correct about this? Meaning now, based on the Bryce's comparison, we are now forced to say that Klai HaKerem begins even before you see any growth. So, consider the following. Amavir Atzitz Nakov Bekerem Im Hosif Masayim Aser. It's an interesting Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in Kalayim. Mishnah talks about this. Interesting for a lot of reasons, which we're going to go through. I take a plant and I walk it over the ground. Okay? So I'm walking with a plant now over the ground, and we say it like this. First of all, there's an idea which we come up and we see time and again throughout Shas. We just get comfortable with it. Is that nourishment that comes from the ground, that doesn't have to be that an item is planted in the ground. Nourishment can communicate through the air. Now, scientifically, I'll let the scientists debate that, right? In terms of what the current thinking is. But that doesn't bother me. In other words, the way the Gemara views it is that nourishment can come through the air. So if I have a pot, even if I'm holding it in the air, if there are perforations on the bottom of the pot, so that means that there's a clear line of air between the ground and the pot, so therefore that is considered that it nourished. If I'm walking over a vineyard and I'm holding a plant, a pot, of any other seed or any other growth, so the Braisa says, is that if the Yanika, now how we establish this, I don't know, but if the Yanika causes growth in the plant that I'm holding, where now it's grown, and the ratio of growth is, it's now 1 to 200 times bigger than it was before, a 0.5% increase in growth, so then it's going to be usher. So first of all, why the numbers? Why 1 to 200? So we know that when it comes to bittul, your general numbers of bittul are 1 to 2. If I have 2 to 1, so then I have bittul. When it comes to truma, so the chachamim increased the numbers. Why did they do that? Because it's truma, as we talked about already a number of times. So the numbers for truma are 1 to 100 in order to affect bittul. When it comes to arla, double it. Now there's a very interesting Rashi, it's right here in Adaf, where Rashi quotes the Sifrei. If you want to see the Rashi, it's the end of the Rashi of Hamavir, where Rashi quotes the Sifrei, and the Sifrei says, you know why we double it by arla? So you can. We'll read. I'll read inside. Uve sifrei yalef le mitruma sheola be'echad umea uklayim shekefel isisuro sheisuran behana. Well, the reason why we're going to double it is because truma is just asr ba'achila, but not asr ba'hana. We talked about that 2 days ago. Right? Arla, and now we're not talking about Arla right now, we're talking about Klai Kerem. Klai Kerem, which is asr ba'achila uvehana. So now double it. So we go from now 1 to 100 to 1 to 200. Okay? Interesting sifrei. Right? It's as if the kana'a is like a... Right? It's a... From a ratio standpoint, it's a factor of two. All right, whatever. Anyway, so I'm holding my plant. I'm walking over the vineyard. There are holes in the plant. There's communication between the plant and the ground. If the vineyard ground caused growth in my plant, and it's now 0.5% bigger than it was before, so now what effectively has become is I now have klai hakerem. I have a mixed. I have mixed produce, and therefore it needs to be destroyed. And the reason why we're bringing this in now is why? It's clear, it's evident, that Klai Kerem is only when I actually have actual plant. Not when I'm planting seeds in the ground, and in the ground already now it's becoming Aser. From the Bryce, it sounds like, in order for there to be Klai Kerem, I need to have actual plant.
Didn't we say that also had the issue of appearance?
We did say that.
What is the appearance here?
If it's in the ground. We did say that. Where did I get that from? I know that. In other words, you want to. Okay, you want to suggest that that here we're talking about where the seed, it's still a seed in the plant.
I'm just saying.
The Gemara is assuming. I understand that. The Gemara is assuming that there's a plant. I mean, Rashi says it. So okay, but I hear you. In other words, we couldn't. But I guess the Gemara also knew its answer. So the assumption is that there's a plant in the pot. So Amavi Arts is not going to be carrying me. Hosif Masai Master. Okay, Hosif in Lo Hosif Lo. So the Brisa says there has to be a Hosafa, meaning there has to be a plant and there has to be an addition to the plant. So Amar Rava Trei Kriksivi. So Rava basically says that when it comes to Klai Kerem, there are two psukim, and there basically are two paths that leads to Klai Kerem. Ksiva zero, ksiva hamalaya. One pasuk describes klai kerem in the form of seed. Another pasuk describes in the form of malaya, growth. Ha ketzad. So now the Gemara is going to say, basically there are two forms of klai kerem. Zerua mi'ikaro be'ashrasha. If the seeds are planted together, so then I arrive at klai kerem through seeds. But specifically when the seeds take root. Zerua uva. Hosif in la hosif lo. But if it's already planted, so now I have a new klai hakerem. Meaning, at what point now is it going to be a violation of klai hakerem? When there's additional growth. Additional growth on the plant. Again, the ratio of 1 to 200. But there has to be additional growth. Meaning, just because it happens to be that it took root together with the vineyard, that's not going to be enough. There, if I already have an existing plant, so then I need new growth. So basically, two forms of kalayim. Seed kalayim, plant kalayim. Okay.
That comes out in the word malaya.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
I guess malaya means the growth, the actual growth itself. I mean, Rashi says malaya is gidulin. And now we continue. We are at a very critical point in the Gemara right now, where okay, the Gemara now has spoken about Hana, more about Hana as advertised. The Gemara spoke about Hana in terms of Derech Hana, maybe not Derech Hana. Abai is Chiddush that when it comes to Kalayim, it doesn't have to be Derech Hana. Perhaps Abai would say that by Basar B'Chalav as well. It doesn't have to be Derech Hana. And we spent just a couple of moments talking about Klai HaKerem, two forms of Klai HaKerem. Okay, and now get to a very fundamental part of the Masechta, of this Perek. Amrav Yaakov b'chol misrapim. Okay, you want to use any type of herb or medicine to heal you, by all means, enjoy. Right, go to the doctor. So, and now, in the context of our discussion, you understand, by the way, this is not a discussion on medicine. This is a discussion of what kind of medicine can you use. Can I use medicine that's asr ba'hana? Sure. based on what we've just established, meaning if it's not derech hanasan bekach, so then it'd be fine. Chutz me atzei asherah. But here's what you can't use. You can't use the wood of an asherah. An asherah is a tree that's planted for the purpose of avodah zara. It's an asherah tree. Comes up time and again. The Torah talks about it. Coming up in next week's parsha, I believe. Right? What does the Torah say when it comes to an asherah? So you see an asherah in Eretz Yisrael, you have to destroy it. So in other words, it's avodah zara. So you cannot be misrape, you cannot heal using the bark, the root, whatever you want to use of the asherah tree. Now he, the Gemara says, now let's try to be clear about this. So the Gemara says, well, if your life is in jeopardy, aren't you allowed to do anything to save your life? And if you're not, and if your life is not in jeopardy, and basically you're just, you know, you're a little bit ill, and this will create a little bit of relief for you, well, isn't all Isuri Hana going to be prohibited? And I guess we could argue that if it's not Derech HaNasan Bekach, so then it would be okay. But if it's Derech HaNasan, so then can't I not use any Isuri Hana? So La'olam Dika, Sakana Ve'afilo Hachi Atzei Asher Olo. So the Gemara says no. First of all, we're talking about where your life is in the balance. We're talking about someone who's in critical condition. And the point is that generally speaking, Isuri Hana, not a problem, because your life is in the balance. When it comes to Atzei Asherah, you can't use it. And why not? And we all know the answer. It's one of the big three. In other words, for three Yisurim in the Torah, one must give up their lives. The Torah says, V'aftas Hashem Elokecha, that you must love HaKadosh Baruch Hu with everything. Everything in the Torah then says, all your money and your life. Right, you get held up, you say your money, your life. So I'd say most people would opt with, okay, take my money. But the Gemara acknowledges, it's so interesting. The Gemara acknowledges that there's some people who say, no, take my life. Now the chances of him not taking your money after having taken your life, I'd say slim, but they're out there. There are people out there like that. So to that, the Torah basically says, I don't care who you are. Either way, if your money is more valuable to you, give up your money. If your life is more valuable, give up your life. All for the purpose of Avas Hashem. And as Rashi points out, you can see in the last Rashi in the Amud, last words of that Rashi, meaning that you have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if you are engaged in a Avodah Zarah, that is a betrayal of that love. It's near, right? V'amis rabbi ba'atzei asherah near kamod debar. Rashi writes that if you use atzei asherah, it's as if you're acknowledging, you're yielding to the avodah zarah, which is a breach of avas Hashem, and so therefore you have to give up your life. In other words, simply put, you have to give up your life for avodah zarah, so that you don't violate the isur of avodah zarah. That is our first point. And then as long as we're here, so now the Gemara is going to take the opportunity. We do this in Sanhedrin as well. The Gemara now is going to take the opportunity to speak about the big three. So basically, even if your life is in the balance, so you could use any type of healing and remedy and therapy that you want, and medicine that you want, but if it involves any of the big three, then you can't do it. So it cannot involve Avodah Zarah, which we just spoke about, Gilu Arayus, immoral behavior, sexually immoral behavior, and Shvichas Damim and murder. So Avodah Zarah HaDamaran, the therapy that involves Shvichas Damim, that's got to be a strange therapy. So but Avodah Zarah HaDamaran, now how do I know that I have to give up my life for Avodah Zarah? So the Gemara says...
Organ transplant.
Yeah, very good. So Avodah Zarah HaDamaran, so we already spoke about Avodah Zarah. The Torah, in the middle of describing it's in Parshas Ki Tsetse, in the middle of describing a woman being raped. So the Gemara says, you know what? I'm sorry, not the Gemara. The Torah says, you know what that's like? It's like murder, meaning the rape victim is a victim, just like the murder victim is a victim. So ki kasher yakam isha rei overatzcho nefesh kena davar zeh. So this is the same thing, meaning that the girl who's being raped is victimized, and obviously the Torah tells us she's not going to have any liability for action because she's honest. She was forced into that position. So the Gemara says, okay, I understand the basic point, but why did the Torah compare the two? In other words, what we were thinking is that the Torah was trying to tell us something regarding, you see murder, it's, in other words, I'm sorry, you see rape, it's just like murder, in terms of victimization. The Gemara says, but really, we could also go the other way. So mekish rotzeach l'nara murasa, meaning the hekish could also take us in the other direction. Ma nara murasa nitin latzila benafsho, af rotzeach nitin latzila benafsho. When it comes to the nara murasa, so she can be saved. In other words, even at the risk of, even at the expense of killing the one who is perpetrating the act. So the same thing is true with rotzeach. So and by ritzicha, yehareg val yavor, meaning ritzicha, murder, is such a heinous act that you can't murder. You have to give up your life rather than to violate the isser of ritzicha. Same thing is true with nara marasa. Tehareg val tavor. So, if the choice is your life or Nara Hamarasa, so you have to give up your life. Now, pause over here for just a moment. Basic discussion and a very interesting discussion. If you look carefully at the wording of the Gemara says that when it comes to Ritzicha, Yehareg Val Yavor, meaning, someone puts a gun to your head, says, here's your choices. Either murder him or I kill you. That's Ritzicha. I can't do Ritzicha. For the reason which the Gemara is going to establish in just a moment. So I have to give up my life rather than violate Ritzicha. The Gemara says the same thing is true regarding Nara Amarasa. Now if you read the Gemara carefully, and look at the wording of the Gemara carefully. Af Nara Amarasa, Tehareg V'Al Tavor. Who's being addressed over here? Right, Tehareg V'Al Tavor. Grammatically. Right? Kill me so that I don't violate. But who's the me? Right, the girl. Meaning, if given the choice. Meaning, obviously, if she's being victimized, there's nothing to talk about. But if given the choice, she should give up her life rather than violate the Isser of Arayus. That's the language of the Gemara. Now, if you let's take a look at Tosas over here. So Tosas says, Afna marasa yehareg va'al ya'avor. That's a very big difference when the way the Gemara says it. When the Gemara says Tehareg, and Tosos notes, I don't have that girsa that we have in our Gemara. Perish HaBoel. Tosos says, we're not talking about the woman, we're talking about the man. Avalhi Tiba Elva Lo Tehareg. Dikarka Olamhi. So Tosos over here introduces us to a very basic concept, and that's the following. That yes, you have to give up your life rather than to violate the big three. That's true. But only, says Tosfos, if it requires you to do an action. If you're totally passive in this episode, so then you don't have to give up your life. Tosfos says that's why the correct gears in the Gemara should be Yereg Val Yavor. Because if it's a question of her, where someone points their gun to her head and she says, be involved in Arayos or you will die, so Tosfos says she doesn't have to give up her life. Because she's a passive participant. Dikarka olami kedamra beben sarah mora. Tosfos quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Tosfos quotes the Gemara in Ksuvos. So the Ri omed deshapi garcina tereg dahad demashma beben sarah mora. Now the Ri wants to keep our girsa and our Gemara as teareg. He says that it could work here in our Gemara as well. Just looking ahead in Tosfos. Of Reish Ksuvas Don Ishare Hainu Hechashi Karka Olam Velo Avda Maisa Avalasas Maisa Kagonsha Omerla Shitavia Erva La Tere Vialtase Maisa Demerzech Yalfin Verzech Lamechav Lemimsar Nafshe Ella Kisha Omerlo Laharog Biadayim. So Tosfos says, keep the words Tereg in our Gemara, but the same basic point. Meaning the reason is not really going to change the basic point that Tosfos is making. If the choice is to her, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go there to violate Arayo, so then she can't do that. But if she doesn't move, so then she doesn't have to give up her life. Again, the basic idea, the difference between passive and active. And Tosfos says this is not just limited to Arayos. This would be true by any of the big three. Aval im omer hanach lizrok atzmecha al tinok o tehareg einu chayav limser atzma kedei lahatzil chaveiro. Tosfos says, for example, let's say the choice is you're not going to have to do anything. I'm going to take your physical body and I'm going to throw you on top of a baby. So there, again, to speak to Tosfos' basic idea, that's passive, that's not active. And Tosfos says, in such a scenario, one does not need to give up his life in order to do so. Okay. So, a very interesting discussion based on the gears of our Gemara, where our Gemara has the words te'areg and not ye'areg. So again, Tosfos believes that the correct gears is ye'areg, and then the Reis says, no, keep it at te'areg, but still the point is being the same. I only need to give up my life if I'm actively involved in the Isser, but not if I'm passively involved in the Isser. Okay. And finally, finishing up the Gemara, back to the Gemara. Now, in terms of Shvichas Damim, the Gemara says that, remember what the comparison was? So just like by Shvichas Damim, you can't give up, you can't murder to save your life, same thing is true with Nara Marasa. How do I know that by Shvichas Damim? So the Gemara says it's a rational argument. You're not going to find much of these in the Gemara, rational arguments, but the Gemara says it's a rational argument. Let's say your instructions were, and the instructions were given to you by Mari Dure, some governmental official, and he says to you, go kill so and so. V'ilo katina lak, and if not, I'll kill you. Amalei liktalech v'lo tiktol. So the Gemara says, now what are you going to say? So I'm sorry, you should say to him, allow yourself to be killed and do not kill. My chaz is a dama didcha sumak tfei, dilma dama dahu gavra sumak tfei. And the reason why is because how do you know? How do you know that your blood is redder than his blood? His blood may be redder than your blood. In other words, just again, the rational argument is life for a life. Your life is more valuable than his life. I can't take his life and put it below my life. So based on the rational argument, so therefore you're not allowed to murder in order to kill somebody else. I'm sorry, you're not allowed to murder in order to save your own life. Okay, good. So we'll pause over here. So again, basic Gemara over here in Pesachim Daf Chafhei. We went over the big three. The reason we went over the big three is we got into the discussion based on the fact that the Gemara says that for my life, I'm allowed to violate Isuri Hana, except for Asherah. And by extension now, we also are going to include Gilu Arayos and Shvichas Damim as well. Although, Isur Hana and Shvichas Damim is kind of, whatever. You don't put them in the same sentence. But anyway, and you're not allowed to save your life even for Avodah Zarah. And then the Gemara launches into the basic discussion of, for the three Averis in the Torah, of Gilu Arayos, Shvichas Damim, and Avodah Zarah, one is not allowed to save his own life at the expense of violating these Yisurim. Otherwise, however, you are supposed to save your life at the expense of violating other Yisurim in the Torah. Okay, we all remember the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's not just limited to this scenario. If there's Kiddush Hashem involved, if it's a group of people, so then you are supposed to give up your life. See the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the 8th Perek, for that discussion, which I'm sure we all remember. Okay, certainly an appropriate way to go into Tisha B'Av with the Gemaras of giving up your life. That's what we're going to be focusing a lot on over the course of the next day. We'll stop over here. Obviously, on Wednesday morning, we're going to have a lot of ground to make up. Okay, we'll push ahead once we come back on Wednesday morning.